Thank you for the good discussion. We have, I think, just one more presentation left in the session, and that is my presentation. I'm Sarah Bibaut, work at the International Rice Research Institute, based in the Philippines, but we work in most rice-growing countries in Asia. So, and what I'm going to tell you about this morning is our project on enhancing zinc biofortification of rice through fertilizer and water management. This is part of the Harvest Plus challenge program, the CG system. But this is a rather unique part in which it's, I'm not focused on plant breeding, I'm focused on the soil science aspect of it. So a little background for you. Zinc deficiency in humans can be especially problematic for children. It impairs immune system function and makes children more vulnerable to diarrhea and pulmonary diseases, which are two major health risks in developing countries. And it slows cognitive development. Here's a list of the current estimate of people, of children under five, who are currently in a category of suffering from zinc deficiency by region. I highlighted South Asia. Southeast Asia wasn't separated out in this particular table, but it is also up there pretty high, between 50 and 80%. So those are the major rice-growing countries where rice is the major staple food. So there are other crops that need to be worked on for other countries. But here's an idea of where we get most of our zinc in human diets. If you can see that refined cereals, that would include white polished rice, are in the poor category, which means they have between 1 and 5 milligrams zinc per 1,000 kilocalories. So, and whole grains are in the better category. So again, that would be something like brown rice. But the philosophy behind biofortification is that even though these are neither one in the very rich zinc category, if we can improve them from their current zinc level, they will have a big impact on the overall nutrition of people because they are consumed in such relatively greater amounts. So people eat their staple foods a much greater percentage of their calories every day. So biofortification is one approach for improving zinc nutrition. Harvest Plus intermediate goal right now is to increase the average zinc content of rice grain by 50% from its current level at about 20 parts per million, this is in brown rice, to up to 30 parts per million. And that estimate is, or that goal is based on meeting 30% of a child's daily zinc needs. And if we can get higher than that, that's great. That's kind of that's the intermediate goal for the next, I think, 5 years of Harvest Plus. Biofortification is intended to complement other approaches to improving nutrition, not replace them. We're not competing against them. It's good if people can eat more of the foods, dietary diversification, if they can eat more of the foods that are rich in zinc. Supplementation would be providing like zinc vitamin pills to people, and that can also be very effective where there is an acute deficiency in one area, but it's harder to spread that over a very wide region of people. Fortification is adding nutrients to food during processing. So it's much easier to do with wheat because it has to be ground into flour. It's hard to do it with rice because of the way rice is processed. So one of Harvest Plus's other major crops for zinc biofortification is wheat. But there's a significant difference between wheat and rice and how we can manage zinc biofortification in them. And that has to do with the fact that rice is usually grown in flooded soils, and wheat never is. So the problem with rice growing in flooded soils, it's generally good for rice. That's how we get to the most productive rice. But the zinc may become unavailable to plants after flooding. So this graph shows that even at a high level of zinc fertilization, this was 50 kilograms zinc per hectare, over a period of about 3 weeks, that the plant availability of that zinc, and this was done assessed by a DTPA extraction, was down at the critical level of about 1 ppm. So a summary of this, I went into some of the details of the soil chemistry behind that, because I'm actually a soil chemist. I did that yesterday in the soil chemistry session, so I'm going to skip over that for now. One of the main points from of this is that rice biofortification needs both approaches, soil management in addition to plant breeding. Because if there's, even if there's a good variety, if it's growing on soil that has very little zinc, it can't reach its full potential for zinc content. So the objectives of this research are to optimize soil management to achieve high grain zinc through appropriate fertilizer input and appropriate water management. As you saw in the previous slide, the water, the time after flooding has a significant effect on how available the zinc is. So if we can manage water appropriately, then that will help. So I'm going to show you the results from three different experiments so far, two different green experiments and a field greenhouse experiment and one field experiment. And just to give you a brief idea of what they are, we don't need to go into all of the details. The first greenhouse experiment had different fertilizer, zinc fertilizer timings, so early in the season, in the middle of the season, and late in the season. And they were combined factorially with 1 week drainage periods. The idea being that if we could add zinc at a time when the soil was not flooded, that it would remain available to the crop for at least that 1 week. And we only used one genotype in that, and it was one of the elite genotypes in Erie's high grain zinc breeding program. And the second greenhouse experiment was similar, except it used two grain zinc genotypes, high grain zinc genotypes, to see what the effect was. And the field experiment was actually, we used just a locally adapted high-yielding variety for this first season to test if some of these new, different zinc management ideas would actually affect the zinc content in that as well. So and that variety was not specifically bred for high-grain zinc like the others were. So I'm only going to show you the soil results from one of the experiments. For lack of time, I'll show you the grain results from everything. But so this is that from the first greenhouse experiment, where we were doing different drainage treatments combined with different zinc timings. So this is zinc availability in the soil, and this is days after flooding, days after transplanting, sorry. It was flooded for several weeks prior to transplanting. What you can see here is with the native soil zinc, no fertilizer added, the continuously flooded treatment remains at around 1 ppm, which is considered to be about the critical deficiency level, throughout the season. In the mid-season drainage period, so the 1 week that the soil was drained instead of flooded, the available zinc increased, almost doubled. And then it also increased in the late-season drainage period, although not quite as much. In the plots where we added zinc fertilizer, basal zinc fertilizer, which meant that we incorporated it into the soil at the beginning of the season, you can see that it did have an impact on the continuously flooded treatment soon after adding, but then it gradually decreased in the continuously flooded treatment over time. Whereas in the mid-season drainage treatment, even though the zinc was added early in the season, when that treatment was drained for 1 week later in the season, the zinc availability increased tremendously. So notice the change in scale here. This is up to 40 parts per million rather than just two. We saw a similar thing happening in the mid-season zinc application. So again, the interesting thing to note between these two graphs, the arrow indicates the timing of zinc application, is that according to the soil data, the zinc added at the mid-season drainage had approximately the same availability as the zinc added earlier in the season and then drained later in the season. So at that mid-season drainage point, they were both at around 40 parts per million. And here again, you can see this delayed effect. Zinc added here became more available in the late season drainage treatment during that drainage. This last graph just shows that we essentially see the same trend with the late season drainage treatment. So the overall lesson from this data is that zinc did become more available during the drainage period, regardless of when the zinc had been applied. Here's some data that therefore surprised us. It's a contrast to that, to the soil data. So the vegetative phase zinc uptake in this first experiment, what I'm showing you here is the actual zinc uptake rate. So it's in micrograms of zinc per plant per day for the 1 week period of the mid-season drainage, which is 30 to 37 days after transplanting. And what you can see is, so these are the different treatments across the bottom, that there is a difference, a significant difference in the amount of zinc taken up by the plants that were, where the zinc was added in the middle of the season, right before this 30-day, right before the drainage period started. The having it drained, the mid-season drainage, resulted in a significant increase over having it flooded. But the surprising thing here was that this was by far a more important, the timing of zinc application was far more important than the flooding versus drainage, even though in the soil graphs it had looked like they would be pretty similar. So this is the result in the final grain content result. This is in concentration, parts per million. The main things to take out of this graph are that this particular genotype, which is one of the high grain zinc genotypes, was above the target zinc level in all conditions of this experiment, which is great news for the plant breeders. That's what they want to see. It's also good news that we can increase the zinc even further above the target level by adding, by managing the soil appropriately. So in the second greenhouse experiment, from now on I'm just going to show you the grain zinc results rather than the soil. What you can see, this is the first, so we had two genotypes in this experiment, both part of the elite high grain zinc breeding program. You can see here, this is the one we also used in the previous experiment. We got similar results in the second experiment, which indicate that the plant continued to take up zinc during grain filling, whereas this, the alternate variety, did not. So there was some response to zinc fertilization in both varieties, but the timing of zinc fertilization was quite important for this variety and not for the other one. Now we go on to the field experiment, which is the one with just a regular high-yielding variety, not bred for grain zinc. And you can see that here we had an alternate wetting and drying treatment and a continuously flooded treatment. And there was significantly higher grain zinc in the treatment that had been less flooded during the season. So it had had several periods of drainage in addition to several periods of flooding. And that we also got a significant increase over the control when we added zinc at the highest level. In this case, it was 10 kilograms zinc per hectare. So this zinc had been added mid-season, and this variety responded to it by increasing grain zinc slightly by the end of the season. One thing, important thing to notice with this is that in this particular genotype, that even though there was an advantage, we could improve it by our soil management. We couldn't improve it very much. The target is 30 parts per million. We got it from 21 up to 23. So our conclusion is that plant breeding is critical for reaching the human nutrition targets, and that soil management can help elite genotypes reach their full potential. So in the case of rice, both are quite necessary. I'd like to acknowledge funding from Harvest Plus and input from the main Harvest Plus scientist, Sidiri, and also my research support staff who did much of the plant handling and sampling. So thank you. We have a few minutes for questions. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's very good finding.
Thank you.
Wetting and drying is the major practice in the Asian rice culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is late dressing of gene fertilizer.
Right.
But also the building the new line there, which is coming up, is a very good thing.
Right. It's been very helpful to work with the plant breeders on this.
Period of trainings, but the late dressing of gene in the alternate drying cycle.
Right.
Should synchronize with the gene company.
Right. So at least in some genotypes, they are still taking up zinc late in the season during grain filling period. So if we add a late zinc application at that time, it can increase the amount of zinc in the grain considerably. I don't have that in this presentation, but it's also difficult to estimate that for rice soils because of the fact that if you measure it when it's a drained, when the soil has been air dried, you get a very different result than if you measure it when the soil is still wet. So, yes.
Because we know from the chemistry of flooded soils that
in acid soil, when you apply, when you grow the soil, the first weeks the pH goes up and try to stabilize around 7.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, your zinc or micronutrients become available for plant uptake. And later on, the pH tends to go back to its original pH of the soil. So, I try to apply zinc at the beginning of the season and at the end of the season, it seemed to puzzle me, what was the thinking about it?
Mm-hmm. So the question is about the effective pH.
Yes.
I did address that more in the soil chemistry discussion specifically yesterday, so that's why I didn't mention it here. What we see is that the more soils that start out acidic before flooding, or neutral to acidic, tend the way that zinc is bound in those soils, it's primarily bound up with iron oxides. That, regardless of what happens to the pH, the redox potential after flooding makes the biggest difference in zinc availability because those iron oxides dissolve. They're reductively dissolved. So the pH does, as you said, go towards neutral after flooding, but then the primary importance for zinc availability is actually the redox potential. As in the in calcareous systems that start out at higher pH, then they also move towards neutral after flooding. The zinc is less available because it's bound to the calcium carbonate directly. And then some of that, as it becomes more acidic, the zinc becomes more available temporarily. And then as the redox potential goes down, again, the redox potential becomes a stronger factor. Let's go up here first.
I don't know about zinc, but with potassium, we have larger consumption. It's going to take up, if you have a soil, the plant will take up the potassium, and it's still not making any yield. Now, the zinc, first of all, can it get to a point where the zinc level is toxic in the rice? Given the fact that this zinc is being taken and going, and how do you control that?
Yes, the question is about zinc toxicity and about luxury consumption. Will the plant just keep taking up zinc or not? We never see zinc toxicity in normal rice soils. The only possibility is in a contaminated soil near a mining or industrial waste site. And in those places, there are enough other problems in addition to zinc. So it's usually zinc and cadmium and sometimes lead and sometimes manganese and copper that we generally recommend that people don't eat rice grown on those soils anyway. So we don't, the vast majority of rice growing area, the deficiency is a much bigger deal than the toxicity.
I'm curious if you know anything about the effects of the flooding and drying cycle on water use efficiency.
Yes, that is not my area of specialization, but there is a whole group of scientists at Erie who have studied exactly that and published quite a few papers on it. My understanding of their main conclusions are that it's system-wide. If you're, like, in a landscape, if you're flooding and draining, you don't actually, at the landscape level, save very much water. But in a farmer's field, in terms of the cost they have to spend pumping their irrigation water, from the farmer's perspective, it is a savings. So let's go back there. Yes. Right. I haven't calculated it out as zinc available per acre. One thing that basically Erie insists on is that we not lose yield with anything that we do. So none of these have had a yield. This alternate wetting and drying does not have a yield penalty. And there's a specific way that you can do that. There's a detailed protocol for how to apply the alternate wetting and drying that indicates, for one thing, that we usually have it flooded at transplanting, which is when it's helpful to have it flooded then. We start the alternate wetting and drying later in the season. And we also have it flooded during flowering. It's in the back.
I wonder how you go the next step, because you cannot see it. I mean, you cannot see the extra zinc when you look at the crop or when you look at the grain. So even with the, how do you keep those streams separate? You have a variety which is bred for higher zinc concentration. How do you keep it separate?
Right.
Variety. And the second one, how do you convince a farmer to to invest in zinc applications while the effect is actually not on yield, there's no cost reduction, you cannot see the immediate effect. How do you tackle
that? Yeah, those are both excellent questions. So the first question is about how can people know whether or not the zinc, there's actually more zinc content in the grain that's being sold. The answer to that, from the Harvest Plus program perspective, is that once they find the genes responsible for high grain zinc in rice, they will breed them into every popular variety. So therefore, it doesn't matter, which everything should come up with a relatively higher level of zinc. So that's kind of the party line. I don't know yet if I believe it myself. But the idea behind that is you don't actually, we are also developing simple tests to determine whether the zinc is high and whether the grain is high in zinc or not. But the problem with that is that it's the poorest people who need the high grain zinc rice. So if you start making it a value-added product, then that kind of defeats the purpose also. So, and the second question was about how you would get farmers to apply fertilizer when there's no other obvious benefit to them. And that one of the answers there is sometimes there is, because there is a yield benefit because zinc is often deficient in rice to begin with. So, but that is what we're trying to do. One of the main problems with zinc fertilization at the moment is that even the standard recommendations that I've been using in this are, they add something like 100 times more zinc than the plant can possibly take up. So we're trying to develop more efficient ways of fertilizing so that it's a very small added cost for the farmer rather than a large added cost.
In 2 or 3 rice rotation crop, gene application is a usual practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Is it possible to have a look at the foliar application?
Yes, we just included that in one of our recent experiments that has just been harvested now, and so I don't have the data for that yet. That's been very effective in wheat. The foliar application of zinc has been very effective at increasing grain zinc content in wheat. Most of the varieties that have so far been tested in rice seem to take up zinc better from the roots during grain filling and not remobilize it from the leaves. So there's some doubt about whether it'll work as well in rice, but we are testing it. Bruce?
I just say, poor people eat white rice generally. What's the partitioning of the zinc between the bran and the other components of the rice?
There's once we polish the rice from brown to white, we still retain about approximately 80%, and that seems to be pretty consistent across varieties. And it's easier to report it as brown rice because that's a more well-defined entity. If you start polishing, then you have to talk about degree of polishing. So we do usually report it as brown, although you're right that it's the white polished rice that's more relevant to human nutrition. But in iron, you lose most of the iron during polishing, but in zinc, you only lose 20%. Right. So the question is, how does educating people and kind of publicizing this information, what effect does that have? That's considered to be one of the advantages of the biofortification approach in general, is that people don't have to necessarily be educated specifically in how to use it. If we can overall increase the amount of zinc that's available in rice grains, then all people have to do is continue growing their rice the way they usually have, but maybe adding some zinc fertilizer. But there have been a number of attempts to get small groups of people so far to try to switch from polished rice to brown rice. So far it hasn't worked. So right now we're not assuming that that's even possible, although that would improve people's nutrition if we could eventually achieve that. Right, and that has been analyzed by the economists in a in an ex ante analysis. But and what they have determined is that if, and of course these are economists that are primarily working with Harvest Plus, but they have determined that per person whose zinc nutrition is improved, that biofortification is one of the least expensive ways to do it, because the investment is upfront in the initial breeding technology, and then it will just continue by itself, as opposed to fortification or supplementation, which have to be done per person. Dietary diversification is obviously great for everyone. As people become wealthier, that will happen naturally. So, I mean, that doesn't, in a sense, that doesn't require intervention. It requires economic growth.
I would not say the new study to which you went with the biofortification is a better soil fertilizer management. So it's an improved fertilizer management.
Yes.
Fertilization is something else.
Well, we talk about there being... Right, better fertilizer management is a part of the overall biofortification system. So,
as he said, biofortification is mainly breeding the new cultivars for enhanced acquisition of micronutrients.
Right.
And from last many years, more than 10 years, I think breeders are working on cultivars for higher acquisition of iron in wheat and zinc in rice. So, what's the success rate so far?
The progress of the breeding.
There's
still the breeders at Erie are still targeting a release of high zinc varieties by 2011, I believe. So in India and Bangladesh first, so that they can be bred with the local varieties, and then it can be tested in many sites. So what my role has been in the last approximately 4 years to get more involved in making sure that the genotypes that have already been bred, the elite genotypes that are soon to be released, can be most effectively produced by farmers. Harvest Plus is mostly breeders. So I'm the only person specifically doing this that I'm aware of with the Harvest Plus program.
What about dry land rice? I know it's spread in some areas in the States, but what about drier areas like Africa? How would the soil management be important there?
Yes, the soil management would be very different in dryland rice than it is in flooded rice. It's still quite relevant. But in terms of the overall amount of rice produced in the world, I can't remember the exact percentage, but something like 70 to 80% of it is produced in the flooded systems because they have much higher yield potential. So the dryland rice, although it has a vast area, mostly kind of marginalized areas in a number of different countries, it doesn't produce on the whole as much of the world's total amount of rice as the flooded areas do. So we target this kind of intervention for the flooded areas, because then we eventually reach all consumers of rice, not just the producers. So I think we're well over our time. The reason I've let this go on is because the next speaker was also a no-show. If anybody wants to continue discussing it with me, I'll be glad to. Otherwise, you may be dismissed.